Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, joined by my co-host, as always, Cody Thompson. Hello, Cody.
Hey, Pat.
We've got Tracy in the house and on the mic. How you doing, Trace?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you.
And Matt, our engineer, always a threat to come on and share his thoughts with us. We always love him too. He's always reluctant, but if you have anything to say, Matt, join us. So, Cody, what's the topic today?
The title is, it's not entitlement, it's engagement.
Yes. It's not entitlement, it's engagement. Here's how this came about. This morning, I looked at the Wall Street Journal online, and I just said, what are they talking about right now? And I saw this very interesting article that said that people are re-engaging. You know what? Thank God it sounds like the Omicron is passing and people are coming back to work. Tomorrow's the big day out here in California. They think they're going to roll back masks and all these other things. This is great. But companies are having a hard time bringing their employees back to work. Now, what's interesting about that is restaurants are not having a hard time bringing people back to restaurants. The NBA is not having a hard time bringing people back to games. There's plenty of other movie theaters, airlines, hotels. So people are re-engaging in society and they're beyond the fear. And yet they're saying, we don't want to go back to work. And the title reflects this. Companies are saying, oh, look, at these people are so entitled. They're such babies. And it's so tempting to jump into that and say, these people. But the thing about it is the real issue is they're not engaged at work. They don't want to go back to work because it's not a pleasant experience for them. And of course, they're going to say things like, well, I like being home and I don't like my commute and all that. And there's reality to all that. But that's not it. The main issue is this. They don't want to be at work. And until organizations take responsibility for that and do the right thing to make the work experience engaging, fulfilling, and yes, even fun, blaming employees is going to lead them to do the wrong things.
I love that, Pat. When you got on and sort of told me the idea for the episode, I was like, boy, there's so much truth to this, because you see literally everyone is re-engaging in every aspect of their life except for one. And what happens is they do blame it like they're entitled. And what's interesting is what you see is all of these companies trying to, the excuse that employees might use is, oh, well, we want to make sure it's safe. But they're going out and all these other, the employers are doing more around safety than the movie theater or the basketball games or anything like that. So there's an obvious underlying deeper truth to it. And I think you're hitting the nail on the head, which is, boy, people don't want to go back because they have not been engaged. That work experience has not been, you know, what I love about this is it sort of proves the underlying point of this podcast for the last 2 years, which is work is not just about productivity. Because if it were just about productivity, it'd be fine for you to stay home and for me to stay home. There's actually something more.
And here's the deal, Cody. I love what you're saying. I think productivity is way down. I mean, even the national numbers show that it's dipped. And I know that people at home are not as productive as they're at work, only because you've got to be with other people sometimes. And now maybe there's more hybrid opportunities and all that, but I think productivity is in the toilet. The numbers say that. My gut tells me that. But that's not the people aren't lazy. They're not saying, I don't want to go back to work because I don't get anything out of being there.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, even if productivity were level on both sides, people would still, there's something that should be dignifying in work, enjoyable about work, even fun. And productivity is a part of that. Like, it's actually fun to be in an office with a group of people who are making a difference in the world and moving the ball forward on really big strategic endeavors. And so I love it, because the other thing that's true about this is some of the companies that already had a really great culture that people enjoyed, their people didn't hesitate to go back to work.
I think there's people listening to this podcast going, we're not having a hard time.
Right.
I mean, we know companies that after a few months said, hey, everybody come back to work. And people are like, oh, thank God we get to come back to work. And so I think there's actually three kind of companies in the world, Tracy. I think there's those that had great cultures and cannot relate to this article in the Wall Street Journal. They're going, our people want to be at work. Mm-hmm. Then there's those that are having a hard time bringing them back, and they're going to go, oh, wait, this is our fault. The executive team has to get together and say, what about this experience is not worthwhile for people to come? And then there's those that are going to say, these employees are just lazy and entitled, and we're going to have to cajole them and force them to get back here to work, and they're going to struggle.
Man, that's rough. Being in that third bucket is rough. I know that just from personal experience, Pat, we were talking about this before the podcast. I was out for 2 weeks. I was sick. And honestly, it was torture for me. Not being at work was one of the hardest experiences. And I was so thrilled to come back to see you guys.
Right.
And it was impossible for me to be productive at home. It wasn't fun. And I was thrilled to come back. So that says a lot.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, because we were like, was it fun? Because I was home too. I missed a couple weeks. And it was like, I didn't want to sit around and watch TV all day.
No, it was awful.
We missed being here. And so ultimately, you know, Cody, we were talking before about the NBA. Imagine if everybody was coming back to everything else in society, but instead of work, we were talking about the NBA. They were at 20% capacity. They wouldn't go, these fans, they suck. They would say, there's something about this experience of going to an NBA game that we have to figure out. Because if they're willing to engage in everything else, but not this, that sounds like something we have to deal with.
Yeah, it's like they would go, we have to make this product better. And that's what a lot of leaders and CEOs should be thinking right now. And Pat, I actually find this interesting. We talked about this at the beginning of COVID, where if a company would have come to us and said, hey, we want to go all remote and go virtual, can you figure out how to help us do that? Big companies or medium-sized ones. And it would have taken a year and multiple thousands of dollars to figure out how to do that. And then when it was necessary, it happened overnight. In a week, people went remote. Big companies. And what I find interesting and what might be kind of revealing is now people are on the other end saying, how do we get people back in the office? And if that process is really arduous and pulling teeth, that's a good indication that, because the companies that are doing this well, that have good cultures where people are bouncing off the walls and want to be there, they didn't have to figure out a whole new process for this. People just came back because they wanted to be there.
Right. And the benefit of all this, I mean, and I do think there's a benefit. I think this is a renaissance. There will be a renaissance, a workplace revolution, where companies before that didn't really have to create a great culture and people still stayed there. Well, now that we have a workplace shortage and we have a bunch of people who are, their inertia says, I'm staying home, in order to be a successful organization, you are going to have to create a fantastic culture. And Matt was saying, our engineer, before we started, he goes, a lot of people think that sounds very soft and very not tangible or real. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, healthy organizations do a few things really well. And as a result, employees love coming to work. First of all, you know that your executive team is not against one another. There's no politics at the executive level. That takes real work. Mm-hmm. So if the executive team at any organization, large or small, is not cohesive, it is a miserable place to work because it does get down to the employees. And if the company isn't clear, if there's not a real clear sense of this is where we're headed, this is what we're about, this is what we stand for, and this is what we're trying to get done, it's not fun to work there. Mm-hmm. And if the leaders aren't constantly reminding people and employ and re-over communicating what they're all about, it's not fun to work there. And if there's not a little bit of structure in place to reinforce all this, you know, it's simple things. There's nothing magic about this. It's not about building a slide. It's not about letting people bring their dogs to work. And I think a lot of the companies that are struggling to bring their people back to work, Apple Computer is one of them. They immerse their people in perks at Apple. Mm-hmm. They built a spaceship. It's beautiful. They probably have pools and organic food and all this other thing. But if it's not a healthy, functional organization, people are not going to want to go back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm curious, what do you guys think, what's going to happen with the folks in that third bucket that aren't able to create a workplace culture that's healthy? What do you think is going to happen?
I think after they suffer for a while, they're going to realize that they have to do this. And if they don't do it after that, they're going to go out of business or they're going to implode. I think most of them will have to learn the hard way when they see like, well, other companies their people are going back. Why are our people not going? They're actually going to look at what is it like to work here. And just because the name on the placard outside sounds sexy and their stock price is up, doesn't mean people, because people want to go to work at a healthy environment.
I think it's somewhat related to our last episode about being sick. And this might be a wake-up call for some of those leaders and companies that are like, hey, we've increased people's pay and we did all these things that we thought would help bring people back to into the office or back mm-hmm. re-engage, and it's not happening. That's going to be a wake-up call for some of them to, like you said, Pat, look at a different company across the road and go, they're not having any issues. Something is fundamentally broken on our side. And what I love about, not we're not doing like a victory dance over here because, yay, you know, we're proved right around organizational health, but it's totally true. When we draw smart and healthy on a board for any leadership team that we've been in on, and we say, here's what a healthy company looks like. It's minimal politics, minimal confusion, high degrees of morale and productivity, and low turnover of your best people. Every single one of them says, boy, I would love to have a company like that. And then they go back and tweak the dials on the smart side because it's hard. And the companies who've spent time building a healthy culture are going to win. I love that you called this a sort of renaissance type moment because this will be great. The companies that are going to thrive in this time and that are going to attract people that care about their mission and their culture, they're going to win.
I totally agree, Cody. And Tracy, when you were talking about this, it's like some are going to go like, well, they're going to just be playing with the perks. Like, well, how many days do they mm-hmm. have to work in and how many days? But they're rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah.
Make it a great place to work. And then, of course, give people some flexibility. You know what I mean? Like, we love working here. Danny's son, Danny, who's in our customer service guru here, her son was throwing up last week, a little guy. She stayed home for a few days and worked from home. But did that mean she didn't want to come back to work? No, she was like missing us, but she was glad that she could be home with Ryder. And so all the flexibility in the world, it doesn't do a hell of a lot if the place you work is toxic.
Sure,
or it's not engaging.
And I love that you guys are so idealistic. I actually think, Cody, to your smart and healthy point, I think people are going to start doubling down on the smart. I hope I do. I hope that they focus on the health. But some of those big companies that have been around a while, I don't know. I hope that's the case.
Well, you know, my message to medium-sized companies out there, and I'm biased because those are the best places to work, medium and small, because you know your customers, you know your leaders, you know one another and all that. I when people get a job at a big company because it's a sexy name, I always feel bad because it's never the experience is almost never very good compared to a smaller one. But this is where if you are a small or medium-sized company, you have an advantage. Even right now with all the regulatory mm-hmm. stuff and all the crap going on, make your culture better. You're going to attract good people. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you're a larger company or even a medium-sized one and people are reluctant to come back, change the culture and really communicate that to people. And then the people that don't want to come back, then if they leave, you know they're the right ones to leave.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But if you have a dysfunctional culture, the people who will leave first will be your best employees.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Tracy, honestly, you know, this might sound pompous or arrogant or like, I hope that some companies double down on the smart side because I want their, we care about the fact that we think human beings should be dignified at their work.
Yes.
And there is, and healthy companies do that better than smart ones. And I want more healthy companies to succeed in this time than unhealthy ones. Like this is sort of a crucible type moment. And when mm-hmm. we get together in our leadership team meetings and our why do we exist is to bring human dignity and fulfillment to people, then this could be a moment that helps spur a lot of companies in that direction. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
And you know, the book, we have the advantage, basically the premise of the advantage is, and why we titled it that way, because organizational health is the greatest competitive advantage in business because it leads to results. It leads to being mm-hmm. smarter. You figure things out. It's a better place to be. So we hope that because of everything that's gone on, that proves to be more true than ever so that more people will do that and employees and human beings and society will benefit as a result.
That's right.
That's all we want. That's all we want is for people small. And human beings and society to benefit. That's it. Is that too much to ask for?
It's just a guy with a dream, Pat. That's all.
So anyway, the renaissance of the work culture, I think this might bring it about. And for those of you that are already doing that, and if you're a longtime podcast listener, there's a decent chance of that. Good for you. Good for you. This is the time to hopefully you'll reap the benefits of that. That's it for today. Short one on At the Table. Big one, though. Let us know what you think. We always appreciate that. And we will talk to you next time. We have a really exciting topic next time. So we'll look forward to talking to you next. God bless.